Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Is Arizona State a football team?
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
BT and the Law Dog. We are
live.
Back. We are back. We're back with our first episode of 2019. The wounds
still
from the
here. Still here, guys.
Haven't gone away. The wounds from the Rose Bowl have healed for the most part, right? Finally
barely.
Ready to talk about it a little bit. We're going to talk 2019 class, that signing class, spring ball preview. We're going to give out some 2018 awards and talk the not so good, the bad, and the ugly that is the current status of the Pacific 12 Conference.
Oof.
We're ready for it. Blaster's set to stun, gentlemen.
Let's rock and roll.
Okay, let's do it, guys. So recruiting is a wrap. Let's talk about that 2019 class that the Huskies landed. Mitch, talk to me about it, bud.
Hey, you know, the big thing that I'm taking a big impression on is how this staff can close. You know, in the past when recruits were waffling, you were always nervous, right? Like, oh, man, we're probably going to lose these guys. We're not going to win out. Oh, they're reconsidering. Take the Asa Turner, right? Asia Turner. I always mispronounce his first name. But, you know, apparently he was showing up to signing day with a Notre Dame letter of intent, ready to sign
that. Right.
And pulled it back, said, no, I'm not signing it. Coaching staff said, hey, we didn't know you were at play still. Give us one more chance. Let's talk to you once again. They get him back in the fold. And I just think they have such a winning formula with these guys and their parents, with whether it's a Built for Life program or what have you. They're closing right now. Whenever a recruit is waffling now, I feel great on our chances.
Mm-hmm. For the guys they want, the guys they're invested in.
For the guys that they're invested in, that
and
they're
you,
offering.
You
yeah.
never get them all when you're playing
right,
at the
sure.
highest levels. Mm-hmm. But you see who we're going up against in some of these late battles, Ohio State, USC.
Notre
Dame. That's where you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you want to be. And it all starts with the success on the field. I mean, you cannot do this without success on the field. I think we all, you know, as fans, want to get that five-star who's going to turn the program around. But those guys don't come to play for 7-6 teams. They just don't. That's what building this program up with the double-digit wins, three seasons in a row, three Pac-12 North titles in a row, that's what that does. It opens the doors to guys that you normally may not have been able to get in past seasons. So you got to tip your cap to these coaches. And the way they closed, I mean, you know, Oregon was getting all that hype all throughout the entire recruiting period.
That's right.
And then here we go and basically catch them at the end. I mean, who would have thought at the beginning? So I'm really excited about it too, Mitch. This has been a revelation.
It's great. And to your point, Tut, like who they've been beating out on these recruits. I mean, it's Notre Dame. It's Alabama. Right? Like, it's very impressive what the staff has done.
They don't win them all. They don't win them all. But that's who you want to be in the arena with, because you're playing against them on the field. Now you got to beat them off the field if you're going to start beating them on the field.
Totally agree. And Dogman had a really good article the other day on Camilio Eifler. Remember him?
Yeah.
And so he went to Illinois, right? And they were making the point that he was a four-star recruit. Illinois has signed, I think it was, the stat was four four-star recruits over the last 5 years, guys. And this team, right? Now, Washington, and the point was, hey, Eifler was just another four-star guy on this deep Washington team, and he's not likely to break the starting roster. Didn't they get 14 four-star recruits or something in this class?
A dozen, at least.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Eifler's kind of a bad example. We're going to get to it later when we get to the spring preview, but you know, we're actually kind of thin at that inside linebacker spot. So I think
I think he
jumped the gun to leave.
Yeah.
But I totally get your point. And that is, you know, when we were struggling as a program, four or five four-star guys, I mean, that was all it was. And now we're tripling that.
It's amazing. And then the last, you know, the icing on the cake, right, was Puka Nacua.
Oh, Puka Nacua is unreal.
Dude,
he's unreal. Yeah.
That was huge. I mean, it was an area of need. You know, we've been thin at receiver. For whatever reason, it hasn't been working out. He's coming in. He's ready to play. And you win a head-to-head battle with Oregon against USC, the guys you have to win some of these recruiting battles against. Man, what a great end to the recruiting season.
Stole him from SC. I mean, he was committed to
Completely.
SC. So,
yeah.
And this is, I believe, I want to say it's either the third or fourth year in a row that we've straight up stolen a commit from USC off their roster. I mean, RIP Clay Helton. It's Dude, it's not going to be long.
No.
And so I don't know if that...
All right, so we've talked Asa Turner. We've talked Puka Nacua. Who else should we be excited about in this class? What do you think?
Well, from a sleeper perspective, they had an article on him in the Times, and I love it. Drew Fowler.
Yeah.
Bellevue linebacker. Oh. Turns down full ride offer from UCLA. I believe it was Louisville, which
yeah.
is where Court Denison ended up, I think.
Right.
And said, no, you know what? I'm going to walk on. I'm going to stick where my heart is, and I'm going to walk on for the Dogs. You know the guy can play Pac-12 football, right? And so I bet he shows up at some point in time down the road.
Oh, and he already has the hearts and minds of Husky Nation.
So I don't know if this qualifies as a sleeper, but my guy is Sama Pa'ama.
Oh, yeah.
16 years old, 336 pounds. They don't make him like that very often. I mean, he just echoes of Vita Vea. So I am really excited to see him after a year in the weight room. I mean, you know, he's not getting a ton of hype, but I think people know that the ceiling is high. It's just a question of if he can show up and earn his way on the field.
He's just got to convert a little bit of that Pop-Tart baby fat into some hardcore shizzled.
Tim Sochel suit you right up there, buddy. Yeah.
And so you touched on that, but in a area of need, 4 4-stars, D-line.
Yeah.
Jacob Band is 6'2", 315. Laiatu Latu, you talked about, 6'4", 270. Sama Pama, 6'3", 336. Fautu Tuatele, 6'2", 304. We got four of them.
Dude,
four of them.
Get those guys in the back of a Chevy Tahoe and break the suspension, dude.
it's not going anywhere
and
fast.
Last year you had a pretty good, not quite as good defensive line class, Latuli Gasanoa.
Yeah, yep. Latuli Gasanoa, yeah. He's going to have to play.
Yeah, and I think you're really building that depth. We're going to get to this in a little bit, but you get to looking forward into the spring and you say, okay, you know, who are the dudes? You were losing a lot back there, so they're
right.
all going to have an opportunity to get on the field.
That's right. Anybody else you like in this class that we want to talk about?
I mean, I think the linebacker class coming in is pretty impressive. Hamuli
looks
yeah,
good.
Yeah, right? And he was the defensive MVP for the Polynesian Bowl,
yeah.
if I remember
he looks
correctly.
Good. He looks
and
good.
Then the kid from Federal Way, too. I can't remember his name, but I'm excited about that class to see what they can do.
I think Cam Davis on the running back,
I think
that's a guy who's probably going to get an opportunity to get some reps, so... You know, he had a great high school career. I'm anxious to see what he can do.
Overall, I'm very pleased. And I think when you get into this caliber, where in your top 20, top 15 classes, I always trust what our coaching staff is able to do with them. You know, whereas you shouldn't be disappointed because someone else is a 12 and we're a 15. I trust our coaches to get a 15 up to a top 10 much better than other coaching staff.
I agree, totally.
Yep.
Should we look ahead a little bit more and talk 2020?
Yeah, let's
do that. Okay, so 2020, a couple of guys. So Sam Adams, obviously, the power back, great hands. He's going to take all 5 of his visits. Son of Seahawks legend, D-tackle,
yeah.
also A&M alum, who's going to really go after him hard, would be a huge 4-star get. You know, you guys remember Aggie Matt, who came and talked with us, diehard A&M guy here in Seattle. He was telling me that the A&M staff is already flying, and they're all over him. You know, they're really trying to pull the dad alumni strings to get him. Savelle Smalls, I mean, that is the big get. Garfield linebacker, 5 stars. One of the best ever from the state. 6'3", 230. Total beast. We're going to be in a dogfight for this one. Florida
Recently
State.
Recently changed his Twitter profile to him wearing a Husky uniform from an Oregon uniform after he went to the Husky basketball game a couple weeks back.
Oh, I love it.
Nice.
And the fans were showering him with attention and affection. So,
yeah, all right.
Off
like
to
it.
A decent start.
We're doing all the right things. He's got, Florida State, Bama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Ohio State, and everybody wants this kid. He is going to be the big get if you can get him. A couple other guys. You know, you always got to talk about the quarterback, Ethan Garbers, 6'3", 190-pound pro quarterback from Cornell Del Mar, younger brother of?
Chase Garbers.
But has better numbers than 4,000 yards and 55 touchdowns as a junior. Of course, you have Sam Heward coming in 2021, but always good to get a quarterback at least one in each class. So you got to feel decent about that, even though the stable right now is pretty strong.
And they took 2 a year ago, so I don't know. I know they're trying to take one every year. I agree with you, but at some point, the room's going to look too full.
And in the transfer era that we're in right now, we're not going to keep all these guys. I get it. But, you know, why not take a flyer on a guy whose numbers look really strong as well?
Yeah.
A couple other guys I really like, 5-star corner out of Scottsdale, Keely Ringo. Videos of this kid just lighting people up. We're going to meet a dogfight with Texas with that. Would love to get 5-star receiver, 6'6", Johnny Wilson out of Calabasas. It's between us and the LA schools. That's what we hear. So a third, a third, a third on each. Daniel Nagata could be great. Ariel's brother. It's going to be a great class coming in 2020, but lots of good things to look at.
And we talked about this a little bit earlier, but just building that foundation, it allows you to go for some of these higher range prospects. And, you know, these guys have gone to high school now with the Dogs making a New Year's Six Bowl every single year.
That's right.
They've been in high school. So, you know, they're looking at us as one of the top 10 programs in the country, and that's where you need to start a recruiting class.
I totally agree. We weren't even on the radar, right, for a class probably 4 or 5 years ago, right? So it's great. I mean, it's impressive just to see how this has been turning.
Great time to be a Husky fan, and things are looking good moving forward. Guys, should we get into spring football and talk about 2019 in a real way?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about it, man. So thoughts from each one of us on the spring football. A couple things I wanted to throw out there. First thing on the special teams. One thing I'd like to see from the kicking side, man. How about some competition between Timmy Horn and Peyton Henry? Now, like Peyton Henry, he actually finished the year a lot better. Of course, we're going to remember him for some of the tougher moments, some agonizing moments.
Well, there was one really tough moment, but it was I'm going to remember the kicks that we didn't attempt. Right.
Yes,
That's interesting.
That's what I remember.
And those are again. I'd say those same moments where we're out there on a fourth down where we shouldn't be. So a tough one. I want some real competition between him. Maybe he wins it and he comes out as a sophomore and looks really great. That's fine. But if not, what Tim Horn can do, particularly just booting the ball into the end zone on kickoff.
Yes.
I mean, gosh, can you just do that,
dude? I keep going back to this. I bring it up, but being at that Auburn kickoff classic game, dude, they kicked it way out of the end zone every single time, and then seeing how we kick the ball off, it was just driving me crazy.
Yeah, and so their starting position is always 35, or if they break one for even longer, but it's tough. He needs to get better at that. And then, you know, in the end, like, so senior Joel Whitford and Reese Porter, what's going to happen here? Because at the time, you know, he has this the Aussie style that looks so great. Had a tough year last year, and, you know, Reese Porter has a completely different kicking style for his.
Yeah.
He's trying to get the bounce. But neither one of them really took the reins on that thing. I know Whitford had some injury problems, but I want to see one of them really turn into that weapon that that Utah has every year that we've been really lacking.
Think about Chris Peterson over the years, and you want to think, you know, special teams, that's right up his alley. Right?
Yeah, it
like
should
Urban
be.
Meyer.
Yeah.
But it just really hasn't been.
Last year in particular.
Well, I think the last couple of years we've really had some pronounced struggles, and I am concerned about that going forward. The fact that they're recruiting these positions and they have multiple kickers, I mean, you know, gone are the days where you just have one and then he graduates and you bring in the next walk-on to kick. I mean, those days are over. So they're targeting this position, but, you know, we have to see it bear some fruit or it's just going to be another tough year out there.
Some of that probably masked in the last few years by, like, a Dante Pettis and then Cameron Van Winkle, where you go, oh, the special teams all over must be great. And really, no, you had a good kicker and you had a lifetime amazing returner.
But the coverage all time has not been good.
You're right.
Yeah, it's been kind of a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I think it's certainly been a glaring issue the last several years, for sure.
So they got to step it up in spring ball. Let's see how much attention they put on it. One other thing we got to talk about, the D-line, man, massive losses. Greg Gaines, Jalen Johnson. So this has to be the year of my man Levi Onwuzurike. He's got to take that throne. He's got to be that number one that we've had back from Danny Shelton and others before. You see Benning Patuwai, like I think he can step up. A lot of hand in the dirt. Does he move forward and really take that edge a bit more? The guy who showed up really towards the end, Josiah Bronson.
Yeah.
He's really got to step up this year as well. So the senior, he's going to be who he's supposed to be, that we saw such a great game in the Apple Cup from him. And then it's got to be somebody. Is it Sam Taimani? Is it Jacob Bandis, maybe the freshman who comes in, which is a lot to ask? Someone else is going to have to step up as well because a lot of holes to fill on the defensive line.
I think if you look at the defense as a whole, but in the line in particular, there's kind of – we look at the D-line and say it's all in one – kind of category, but really we got the ends and we've got the tackles.
That's right.
And at the tackle position, we're really totally rebuilding, right? It's Latuli Gassanoa or bust, Taimani maybe, like you're talking about,
maybe
a freshman. Like, that's a total unknown. At end, though, we're actually looking okay. I mean, on Onwuzurike, I'm not sure whether they classify him as an end or a tackle, but he'll be on the field. Benning Patuwai, he's been out there for a few years in a row now. And then outside linebacker, you've got Tryon Nagata, Ryan Bowman. All those guys have been on the field last year. All of them have had their moments. So I think on the D-line and that rushing position, I'm actually encouraged enough. It's okay. Tackle is the big concern. We just don't know who's going to replace Greg Gaines.
Yeah, and I think, you know, look, that single disruptive force that we've had with the Sheltons, with the Greg Gaines, you know.
Vita Vea.
The other thing with Gaines, he was so consistent. I swear he played every down.
Yeah.
Right? It seemed like he was out there every game, every down. So it's like, who's behind him?
Cal Ripken of the D-line.
Right. I mean, like, they could have a stud behind him, but we just haven't seen it yet. So it's such an unknown.
Let me touch on those linebackers. So a little bit more on those. I mean, we lost, obviously, BBK. Yeah. Huge numbers.
Wow.
Tevis Bartlett, big loss. We're going to lean on Brandon Wellington, DJ Beavers, Ryan Bowman, we talked about. You know, especially if Benning Poitouai does actually move into the line, and, you know, it'd be tough to see, but, you know, or just edge rushing as a linebacker. But, you know, think of who's going to step up. Kyler Manu, Jackson Sermon, maybe? Nagata, Joe Tryon, Fetui. I think lots need to be solved here, but I'm not as worried about this because I do think there's a lot of depth in this. I'm not as concerned about it.
I wouldn't use the term depth. But I'd say what you have are you have Beavers and Wellington are proven commodities. You know that's right. After that, I think it actually gets really, really thin. And on the outside, you know, like we talked about, you've got enough returning quality. You know, you're going to be able to redshirt freshmen if they're not ready to get on the field and whatnot. So, you know, when you're talking about this defense, I think it's a mixed bag. We're placing 9 starters, and you look at that and go, whoa, I mean, that's a holy crap kind of thing.
Right.
But you look a little bit deeper, and it's not quite that bad. A lot of these guys have been on the field and have produced. DJ Beavers is a great example. When he's been on the field, he has been awesome. He just cannot stay healthy. If he has a healthy senior year, this death row defense will pick up where it left off.
And do we know, is he okay after that injury against Ohio State? Like, is he going to keep playing? Some people were saying that was a pretty serious injury.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Hopefully he's back.
Yeah,
that would be a huge hit.
Huge hit if he's not ready for spring ball and maybe not in the fall.
Yeah.
You guys want to talk about the secondary?
Well, yeah.
Let's hear about it. What do you think, man?
Well, I mean, from my perspective, it's the year for some of these heralded incoming recruits from last year to step up. Like, I'm thinking Kyler Gordon. I want to see a lot of him, like, see what he can do in spring. You know, where they put him is going to be really interesting. I'm looking for Keith Taylor to continue to progress.
Oh, yeah.
That would be great. I think they're in a good spot there. And, you know, it's just playing time. It's like kind of next man up with Jimmy Lake and the talent that he's acquired. And some of these younger guys that are going to come in are going to push these guys too, which is great.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the same thing in the secondary that I was talking about. At corner, I'm not worried about Keith Taylor. I mean, he has played well when he's been on the field. Elijah Molden.
He has
shown
what
a ton of potential.
Great.
Miles Bryant is back, right? Kyler Gordon. Like, I'm not worried about those guys. Julius Irvin, maybe. Then you turn over to safety, you know. That makes me a little worried. Watching Brandon McKinney in the Rose Bowl, I'm a little concerned about that
exposed.
Spot. And then who's your Taylor Rapp replacement? Is that going to be, your JoJo McIntosh replacement? Isaiah Gilchrist? So that's a really unproven area there. Maybe Kyler or Julius Irvin switches to safety there. But to me, that is the area of concern. Corner, I am not so worried.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So I actually think, you know, again, it's like, the closer inspection you give, I think it looks better than originally you might think.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, look, there. You have to trust in what they've been able to do year after year. But, yes, if you're just looking at the Rose Bowl tape, it's a little scary.
Yeah.
It's a little scary up the middle.
You know, I mean, we had that year where we had the 3 DBs get drafted, and we were like, oh, my gosh, we're going to take a huge step back in the secondary, and everybody just stepped up. I would be really surprised if we had that this coming year. I think we're going to take a slight step backwards, but they're still going to be a very good defense.
But you know what?
Secondary.
They have reloaded every year under Coach K, Jimmy Lake, and Coach Pete. And they've lowered that scoring average against every single year. The Peterson, it's unbelievable, right?
I agree it's going to keep continuing, but
we didn't think that 2 years ago, and look what happened.
All I'm saying is my element of surprise will be even that much higher this time if they
do
it again.
I do agree. Like,
so how do you judge the units? Which unit on the defense is the most concerning for you?
I think most concerning is linebacker, just because what we talked about. If DJ Beavers isn't there, Tevis Bartlett gone, Brandon Wellington, relatively unproven commodity, and I wouldn't say our outside linebackers with Tryon, Nagata, Ryan Bowman are necessarily a strength.
Yeah,
you know, I would say that was kind of the weaker part of the defense last year, so that really concerns me. I think defensive line is probably the strength, actually, just because I think we have recruited that position very well. And I think we have great coaching there. Kwiatkowski not calling the plays anymore. He's totally locked in on the D-line. We have big guys who are ready to go. I like it.
My interest is in, I really want to see how they progress at safety during the spring, right? You know, the McKinney and Gilchrist, you know, conversation is really interesting to me.
Who's
going to
step out of the,
who's
going to
step up,
over?
Right? Like, what are they going to do there? You know, McKinney had a tough Rose Bowl, so
What do you, so should we move over, guys, in the end? I think, look, we got to trust that this defense is going to be good.
It's hard to do it right now with nine starters who are graduating and are going to the NFL. But I think at the same time, we've recruited well. These coaches have proven that they'll reload when they're – you know, we thought Shaq Thompson and Danny Shelton gone were
powerful to defense. It was over.
That was the best defense we'd had in 10 years. So, you know, you never know. It's all about these coaches, and they've proven they have a track record that they get it done.
Absolutely. They've proven our trust there.
They sure have.
The system.
They sure have.
Relax.
That's right. Yeah. You won't see us as concerned as a national pundit who just is looking at starters leaving.
Right.
And then
right.
making a decision based on that. So we talk offense. What do you think?
Let's do it.
It all starts with Skinny.
Oh,
Skinny
here we go,
Eason.
Buddy.
We just don't. This is another, like, you know, everybody's pinning their hopes on this guy and saying, hey, this is going to be the savior of UW football. We can't wait for Jake Browning to be gone. Okay, well, now you got a guy who hasn't thrown a pass in 2 years. So this is a total unknown. I think the expectations have gotten a little high. This guy did, you know, we have to admit it, he did lose his job to Jake Fromm in Georgia.
Well, hold on a sec.
I get it.
Hold on a sec, Tuttle. I don't think this is a complete unknown because I think one of our podcast hosts had a little inside information on Eason.
On Eason? On Skinny Eason?
Yeah. Didn't you have a late night conversation with a certain defensive coach about Skinny Eason and how well?
I have
not to name names on the coach. We'll keep that anonymous.
Had over a few beers. There's some coaches on the Husky football team who are gushing over this kid and like quote unquote fans. You have no idea how good this kid is.
And look, I went to I go to all the open practices, open to the public and whatnot, and I think Eason looks awesome.
He's got a cannon.
I'm just saying, we need to keep expectations at bay. He's going to set foot on the field for the first time against, what, Hawaii to open the year?
Yeah.
Eastern, whatever. I can't remember what opening game is.
Yeah.
We got months to figure that out. But we don't know what we're going to get. Now, it might be awesome. I think we're all thinking it's going to be awesome. We're hoping it's awesome. But we just don't know. So, I don't expect anyone else to challenge him for the job. He's going to be the starter. He's going to be the quarterback. I think all this talk about, Jake Haener. We saw enough out of Jake Haener that I know that I don't want Jake Haener to be the starter over Jacob Eason.
Yeah.
I feel like you can put me in two camps. One, I will never be part of that. Can't wait for Browning to be gone. Was never part of that camp and think that he still is. History will be very kind to what he's done. You can also put me in the camp of, I feel like we know. I think Eason's going to be great. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I think he's going to be awesome.
Well, and I think that if you look back, we talked about this at one of the shows at the end of the year. You look back at that 2016 team that went to the Final Four. They had a first-round receiver. A second-round receiver,
Who's
guys who were drafted in the NFL draft. You had Miles Gaskin, who might be one of the greatest UW football players of all time. And you had an offensive line. And each one of the five offensive linemen on that team was either first team, second team, or honorable mention on the all Pac-12 teams. That team was loaded.
Right.
Jake Browning was all Pac-12, but you look at Jake Browning and go, man, he had a lot to work with there.
Sure did.
Yep.
Now we look at Jacob Eason and go, okay, we need you to shoulder a little bit more of the load because we don't know about some of these skill positions. Miles Gaskin gone with receiver kind of rebuilding. So it's a kind of a different dynamic. But we think that Jacob Eason is the kind of guy who can handle it, who can spread the ball around and just stretch the field.
Let's talk about the rest of that. Who's going to help him out? Let's talk a little bit more about the running backs and the receivers.
Yeah, I certainly think the running game is where we're kind of be watching in the spring. Right after we're watching Skinny, we're looking to see if the Salvon show is going to take over. Right, I have to actually say, I think the running back has left me wanting a little bit more. When those two games that Gaskin was out, I'm not seeing enough out of McGrew and Kamari Pleasant where I really love what I'm seeing there. So I obviously we love Salvon, But he's a different kind of back than Miles was. He's not going to be an every down back in the same way. So I think we may see some Richard Newton and some Cam Davis, you know, getting some opportunities here. And we might see a total timeshare here. We might see Salvon still getting his 10 to 12 touches. We might see a bunch of those guys getting 4 or 5 touches. I mean, I don't think we're going to see a clear takeover of Myles Gaskin. And Myles Gaskin didn't have that job as a freshman until he really proved himself on the field. So yeah. I think we're likely to see a lot of spreading the ball around.
That could be one of the more interesting stories coming out of spring of who asserts themselves, really. I mean, we all have this Savon, you know, image of our head of him being the lead horse, right?
And he is electric.
He is, but, you know, sometimes you can make an argument of, hey, man, you should probably make a cut. You know, you're stretching the field a little too much, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were times when McGrew really started flashing. Kamari Pleasant had a couple, but, like, at the same time, I'm with you. There's something there. That is going to be a really interesting position to watch and see if someone can really start separating themselves.
We have been blessed in the last decade or so with Chris Polk, Bishop Sankey.
Yep.
A lot of great backs. Maybe none of them had like huge NFL successes, but I look at Myles Gaskin and I go, man, you might be the best of all those guys.
Yeah, they were all great.
You combine the physicality with the ability, the vision, the ability to see, and all that.
Patience.
It's all about that patience.
He's
unreal.
Just an all around great college running back. It's going to be tough to replace.
Well, and so what do we say about the rest of that? Who's Easton going to be throwing this to?
Well, so my big thing that I'm looking for is who's going to step up with Marcus Spiker, right? Austin Osborne, you know, can they get some of the guys? Quentin Pounds, is he going to be able to come back? You know, he's been bit by the injury bug quite a bit there. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll be really interesting to see. I'm really looking for some of those freshmen to that redshirted last year to see if they can come and really start progressing between that freshman and sophomore year.
Yep. More development. I'd love to see Ty Jones, the physical specimen he is. How about Bocelli?
Absolutely.
Bocelli finished great. He finished really strong.
Yeah, Fuller got off to that great start and kind of became the go-to guy and faded, and Bocelli kind of became the go-to guy at the end. I mean, in the end, I think we look back at the receiver position last year and say it kind of didn't leave me satisfied, but I wasn't disappointed based on what our expectations were. I think going into this season, it's like, we don't graduate anybody. Everybody's coming back. I don't want to be disappointed after next season.
Yeah.
We have enough talent in that room. So it comes down to coaching. Lubick is gone, and we're on our fourth receiver coach in 5-6 years?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Junior Adams, you know, we're looking at you. We're hoping you're the guy who can unleash the talent that's in this room because you have plenty of it to work with.
And the other piece there, too, is does Hunter Bryant come back and have a spectacular year, which would be huge, right?
He was better than advertised once he got healthy last season. Yeah. He just wasn't healthy until, the Apple Cup or the Stanford game. So, I'm not worried about him. I think he is going to be Skinny Easton's number one go-to guy.
Yeah, and so talk about that. They won't be waiting for the ball to get to him. I can't promise you that Easton's always going to make the right read, but he has got a cannon.
Yeah, he's going to put it on him.
Yeah, absolutely.
You stretch the field with Bocelli speed, you know, Ty Jones running deep slants. You spread out that defense and then a Hunter Bryant streak over the middle.
A lot
this
of options.
Could be an electric offense if everything goes right.
Right.
We just don't know.
We don't know. And there could be one more wild card in here. Let's not forget, Chico McClatcher took a big break from the program.
That's right. And he's back.
Kind of wrote him off, too, yeah.
Exactly. I think a lot of people have written him off. Like, if he comes back and hopefully he's in a good place and, you know, his mind's right, he could really contribute here and provide some senior leadership and take this offense
catching
into the
passes
next step.
Out of the backfield, showing that brilliance that he has at times.
That would be a big deal.
So the only way this comes together is if we have an offensive line who's ready to open gaps for those running backs and ready to protect. What do we think?
I look at this offensive line as probably the strength of the whole team, basically, next season. I mean,
it's unreal.
You have 5 guys who are basically starters coming back. I mean, I'm counting Trey Adams and Jared Hilvers at the tackle spots. Those guys have both been starters, and they're both probably going to be your bookend tackles. I think Adams probably on the left side. Wattenberg and Jackson Kirkland probably at your guard spots. Those guys have been starters. Nick Harris, probably your senior leader at this point. So you know, I look at this and go, this is probably one of the best Husky offensive lines maybe since like the early 90s. I mean, and you look at the size of these guys. Adams, 6'8", Hilver, 6'7", Jackson Kirkland, 6'7", Wattenberg, 6'5". I mean, what more do you want? These guys have, you know, a million starts under their belt. You know, they had their moments, and they struggled at times. I mean, Jackson Kirkland was just a freshman last year. Wattenberg was starting for the first time, Hilbers. But now they've got that experience.
Right.
And you've got some depth, too. Henry Bynavalu and Henry Roberts, those guys have played quite a bit. So, I mean, I feel like you have the depth where if, you know, something's not working out or there's an injury, like, those guys can step in. I look at this and go, I'm more excited about this offensive line than I have been in a generation.
They should be moving people around.
Yeah.
We should see that for sure.
And maybe mask some of the inexperience by the running backs and give Mason a little bit of time that he needs. So,
and so, a lot of you know, excitement. It could be the type of football that the first half is a little maybe hit and miss with this offense, but hopefully they're starting to impose their will in the third and the fourth quarter.
Yeah, that's right. I think they're going to look good, guys. So a lot of excitement, I think, around Husky Nation for the 2019 season.
It's going to be a little bit of a different team.
It's going to be a bit different.
It's not death row anymore. I mean, we don't know. But this offense, I mean, that's what I'm like.
It could be more balanced.
Yeah. More balanced, right? Yeah. So. Yeah, we could use a new moniker. I could use a new shirt. So, guys, we're all excited for it. Husky Nation's excited for it. Real quick review of 2018. I'll throw this out to you guys. 2018, best moment. What do you say?
Boy, Apple Cup was pretty tough to beat. That was pretty amazing when
Miles Gaskin touchdown
when he was pushing into the end zone. One of my favorite memories for sure.
Mitch, I knew you were going to say that, so I had a second one ready to go. The Byron Murphy pick six in the Pac-12 championship game.
Yeah,
I mean, with the stakes as high as they were, Byron Murphy, the game he had, to me, that was right up there too.
I would agree. I'd have that as my moment. Second to... seconds afterwards when I at that point, as me in a stands having had the entire game of open bar,
you were in good shape at this point.
In very, very good shape, and putting Mario Bailey in a headlock. That to me was the best moment. I hate to ask about it. Low point of the season.
I mean, I think it was the field goal for me with Oregon was really, really tough.
Yeah.
Just because ultimately it didn't really matter, right? We still took care of business.
At
the time it did, though.
I mean, a lot of people point to that Cal game and go, man,
it was a close second.
You could have won that game 10-6 or 7-6. You know what I mean? And you blew it by throwing that pick six, and I get it. But at the end of the day, we all knew that we were still in the exact same position in the standings and nothing had changed.
Right.
So we were able to get over that one. The Oregon game, it's one that I may never be able to get over. I mean, just standing in Autzen Stadium and listening to that crowd just go ballistic, it was, God, this is too painful.
Yeah, for as much as Pac-12 champions went to the Rose Bowl, low points in every season. Player of the year, who do you say?
Oh, I think it was Miles. For sure. I mean, he was just amazing in his career and it was the way that he approached it. And a lot of that's coming out right now, too, of like how he's preparing for the combine and how he's just like a dog in terms of the competition and working out hard and humble. My favorite part was, out of all the articles about him, was that after the Apple Cup, he proactively went over to the chain crew. The UW chain crew, and said, "Hey guys, let's get a picture together. We've been together for the last 4 years."
Awesome.
I mean, that's just cool.
What
you know,
guy.
It's pretty sweet.
Moving them chains.
Yeah.
Miles Gaskin, not close. If you're gonna make me choose, I'll pick a defensive player, and I think this guy, despite how good he was and how impactful he was on the program, still doesn't get enough credit. That's Greg Gaines.
Yeah, that's my runner-up.
Like Greg Gaines, just like Mitch was saying earlier, he was the Cal Ripken of this team. He was always out there. He was always commanding a double team. And when you didn't double team him, that's when he made a great play and made an impact even more so. So I think that guy doesn't get enough credit. I'm going to miss him a lot. Those are the kind of guys that really you build the program on.
And was he a three-star? He must have been a three-star recruit, right? Yeah. Like, he's just a great example of what they do with talent.
Yeah, he was a Boise guy.
He was going to go to Boise State, and then he changed his commitment. Man. Okay.
And the most important category everybody wants to talk about, best tailgate.
Your Buffalo sliders were right up near the top.
For CU, you're pretty good.
The Flabongo with some CU undergrads taking the Flabongo shots. Yep.
Pretty good.
This is decent. I might say our away tailgate at UCLA, tailgate of 90 of us with a taco truck and the bartender at UCLA. Thanks for hosting
us, Rose. It's the bartender that makes it art. You know?
The bartender does make it art. But
what about that piano bar at that one?
That wasn't
tailgate.
Even ours, but that was a damn good tailgate.
Yeah, it was right around the corner. I think it was the same one, the Colorado
one, right?
Yeah,
set up the piano bar around the corner from us. Pretty solid. Excellent season, though. What a great time. 2018 was in the end again. Back to Pac-12 champions. Now, are we going to pull off, to switch sports here, that elusive double championship?
Wow.
Hoops and football. Let's talk Husky Hoops.
Well, I think you got it. You got to tip your cap to the Hardwood Dogs, man. They are playing out of their minds.
And
they, 5 losses on the season with a couple of buzzer beaters, one that was clearly stolen from them against Minnesota. I mean, I look at this team and I go, this is a tournament team, and I think they're going to hold their own. They've already clinched a share of the Pac-12 championship. I think it's all theirs for the taking. What, win more, get one more game?
Yep.
And they've got it. I mean, they deserve it. They've worked really, really hard. Hopkins really, really pushes them, and I'm excited. I mean, this has been, basketball, this is normally the dead time of year. We're in hibernation, right? We're not we're not doing a dog pod in February, but hey, the Hoops team got us off our couches, and now we're talking about them again. This is awesome.
And look, let's not forget, one of those losses, Gonzaga, not at the last second. It's the number one team in the country right now.
Right.
I love watching them, and Matisse Thybulle.
Gosh.
We're here recording this live from the Black Duck in Issaquah. This is in Issaquah.
It's a stomping grounds.
The stomping grounds of a Matisse Thybulle. What he does on defense... blocks from behind are so hard to execute without fouling. And not only does his blocks numbers, but him blocking jump shots from behind without fouling is unreal. Some of the blocks that he has, and I'll say, these aren't the ones that make it on SportsCenter where typically he's, elevated, etc. He'll close out on 3-point shooters from the key.
And just get a little finger on.
How do you blocking a 3-point shot when you're, and he's closing that gap from that. That and the steal, where like if you're an opposing offense, the best play when he's on the court, whoever has the ball is taking it up, just try to shoot. Like, don't pass.
Yeah.
Like, your pass is essentially going
to
get
that
picked
story
up.
About him going to Hopkins and saying, "Okay, this isn't working. You need to put me at the top of the zone." Now look what happened.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Oh, it's unreal.
Yeah. Hey, look at the other guys like David Crisp. What he's done this year is really impressive. Yeah. I mean, last year I'd be frustrated when he would shoot in some of these threes, but man, this year now I'm like. Totally turned. And
Timmons, same thing.
Timmons, I was just going to say, I love Timmons, dude.
Timmons, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, man.
This is a lot more fun team to watch than we've had in a few years. And I think Washington fans and Seattle, I think we appreciate defense,
Yeah.
And you look at this defense, this is a lockdown defense on this Husky team. It's fun to watch. I don't know if they have the offensive firepower to make a deep run in the tournament, but hell, your defense shows up every night, you will always have a chance.
Sure will. Defense travels.
Yeah.
And that's what you're doing in the tournament, right?
And it's a different type of look, too.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing that could really help them, right?
You're zigging while everyone else is zagging. Yeah. It's huge.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
You see some projections of having them come in as like an 8 and a 9 seed and that maybe they'd face off in a second round against a Gonzaga. It'd be pretty fun. I'm just excited that they're back in it.
You would never have caught me saying this in the last 15 years. I pray that we play Gonzaga in the tournament. I would love to be the team that knocks them out of the tournament.
Amazing.
I would love nothing more.
I would be curious to watch that Gonzaga game and now watch this team and see the improvement that
they're playing so much better now.
They're playing so much better.
Yeah,
they're real interesting. They're playing with confidence.
It's been good to see. I mean, and you know they're good when you get a couple of football guys talking about basketball. And this is that point here where these guys are just awesome to watch. So we've talked.
The ball's round in basketball.
The ball's round
right?
in that. You bounce it. Yeah, it's different. So we've talked a little bit about. I had one more thing I had to bring up to you guys where I knew I was a father of the year. Sitting in the living room and some news is on in the background, and they're talking. Hey, there's 3 feet of snow fell on Portland, Oregon. My 5-year-old, Oregon. Nobody likes Oregon.
Well done.
Myself, this is subconscious. We're not even talking football. And I thought, maybe I need to tone it down a little. No, he's fine.
Yeah.
He's trained well. Where he's making blanket statements about an entire state.
Wait till he can drive. The speed limits are like 5-10 miles an hour lower. The whole state is irritating. Let's just be honest.
God, they're so lazy. You can't even pump your own gas.
There's nothing good. He's got it figured out at 5. Should we get into it? We talked about the good. We talked about the bad. Do we get into the ugly and talk about the Pac-12?
Ooh. Ouch.
Pac-12 topics. We got a couple minutes for it. Let's hear what we got. What do you think, Tuttle?
Well, I think we wanted to kind of discuss some of the issues that are going on. There's a lot going on in the conference right now. We had that big multi-piece expose, if you want to call it, by John Canzano of the
Oregonian. Well done, too. I mean,
kind of digging into some of the major issues. But I think let's start with the officiating. I think that's kind of a sexy topic that everybody kind of likes to get into. So, Mitch, they've imposed some new standards on officiating. We saw some of the issues they had last year with the general counsel sitting in the review booth, making perhaps or giving input on decisions that were made on the field.
I thought if your name was Woody, you could just call in and just say, hey, let's take a closer look at that, guys.
So that was kind of a big issue last year. And it's been a big issue.
What a freaking embarrassment.
It's been a big issue since that Oregon-Oklahoma game,
That was a long time ago.
But, I mean, it's been kind of on everybody's minds. Like, okay, when are the Pac-12 going to get their official straight? I look around and go, look, every conference, all the fans, they all complain about their officials. I happen to think ours are the worst, but everybody does complain.
Right.
And so so now going forward, do you think that the changes they've made and you think the expose that Canzano has done, do you think some of this coming out and shining a light on some of these issues, do you think they've fixed the problem or do you think this is just a one step on the road to recovery or nothing?
Yeah, I think that what they're doing now, they just announced this, where they're hiring an independent firm to come in and analyze it, right, in terms of what they've done to date, is what they need to do. Because, quite frankly, they don't have the credibility anymore. Nobody looks at it and says, like, we trust you guys. So now they have to, they're forced to go and say, we're going to have a consultant come in here who's accredited and people trust to really establish trust back in the system. And we'll see where it goes, because ultimately the product is what's going to speak for it. And just some of the egregiousness and like just the JV shenanigans going on with some of this stuff is what they need to just totally clean up. So,
yeah, I agree with you, Mitch. I mean, the one thing I would say, you brought up trust, and that's the one thing where I kind of raise an eyebrow, where in a normal year, I'd say, yeah, you're doing the right thing. With like Leisure Suit Larry, I just have lost trust in their leadership. And where something comes out, my first reaction when they say, we've got an independent counsel coming in to review officiating, normally you'd think, oh, they're great, they're on the right step. And I think, what's the angle? This has to be BS. There aren't teeth behind this. What's the angle here? And hopefully that's not the case, but look, they've lost the trust of the fans.
Let's put a feather in that, Larry Scott, because I want to come back to that in a second. Another issue that's come up very recently since we've had a last show is selling a stake of equity in the conference.
Yeah. Wow. Very interesting.
Potentially, to get an infusion of cash. Our boys at Wildcat Radio, they have heavily criticized this online and on their podcast. I'm curious what you guys think. Do you think this is the right move? Try to get some cash now, maybe build up that brand a little bit, and then buy it back? Or maybe just take a roll with 90% of the equity. What do you guys think?
I will say, working in this business, for companies that have performed at a level that the Pac-12 has, your investors will not go back and give you money, and they'll write off their investment at this point. You don't go back and re-up with companies who are performing at this level, and so the valuation that they're going to get, this capital, is very low,
right?
Because no one is going to trust what they're doing with their capital. And you also have long-term media engagements that are difficult to get out of. If you're an investor and you think that you can actually make fundamental changes, so that's what you think. I think I'm going to invest in this asset, and that my money and my leadership that's going to come in will somehow turn it around by changing our product direction, changing our strategy, putting in some new leadership, trimming some of the fat, and then we're going to get a greater X investment than we could put our money elsewhere. You can't do that.
Right.
You can't do that, A, because of you're a conference that whose voting members are public schools with public universities that make you constrained. So your board of directors essentially is, you know, for the most part out of a handful of private schools, publicly elected officials. The second piece of that is these media, the media deals that go for so long that were horribly signed that you can't get out of, and that's the big lever that you have to pull.
I think there's a couple of factors. I just think if they were, their brand is so tarnished right now that it would be really difficult to get into any position that I think would be beneficial for them. So, you know, Will Nerdus is just such a great job of covering this, and they're in a tough spot right now. You know, I'm of the opinion that the media landscape is changing so rapidly as well. Like, literally in mm-hmm. 3 or 4 years, is it the streaming, you know, entities that are going to control more of the play than the DirecTVs or the Dishes or, you know, some of the other media rights? So I'm almost of the opinion that if I'm a school president right now, the only way you're going to get your credibility back, and to go back to your feather, is Scott's going to have to go.
Yeah.
You're going to have to reestablish your brand, and then you're going to have to realign your strategy on when, I think it's 2024, when the current deal expires with ESPN and Fox and the current, you know, arrangement they have. And I know that you'd set that up beforehand, but I think this has just been so mismanaged that we're back to a lack of credibility with how they're running this whole media thing.
Let me make a counterpoint. Okay. And I know it's kind of easy to rip on the conference, and I do not agree with them selling off the equity, as I posed the question to you guys. I do not agree with that. Mm-hmm. For this reason, because you have retained 100% of your rights, you need to leverage that in the best way possible. And you touched on this, Mitch, but the streaming options and all the other future landscape of the media, that world is now your oyster. You can now capitalize on that in the way the Big Ten network and the SEC network cannot.
Right.
They are beholden to their providers. And I think if you had asked us 10 years ago, 15 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, we would rather have a tier one deal with the ESPN, with a profitable network like the Big Ten. But since we don't, I think we need to carve out kind of a different niche. I think that's Larry Scott's strategy. I think he has lost a ton of credibility on some of these other issues that has affected the brand and has affected the conference in a negative way. But I do think if you can give him credit for one thing and one issue, it is that he understands these media rights and the media negotiations better than a lot of other commissioners. And he has retained those rights to all those tier one through tier three rights for a specific reason. And I think it's to leverage it for the future. I think the next media deal will either establish him as a
visionary,
or a
goat. It's going to break him.
Or a goat, basically.
It's going to break him.
So, you know, I think the jury is out on that point, is what I would say.
I agree with you. I think who knows, in a couple of years, it's maybe some crazy Amazon deal or something nuts,
right?
Where Pac-12 on Prime or some craziness.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's that British DAZN. That's doing all the sports streaming and picking up boxing and all this stuff. It's like, that's not even on people's radars. But if you go on your Amazon or your Roku, you can get it.
You see it.
So I think that is a future thing that we need to be on the look for.
And I could see that. I guess the thing that I would also just like to see is just a little more credibility on how they're running the network. For the love of God, a little less water polo, all right? Freaking Olympic sports, guys. Like, pull your heads out of your asses, all right? That's not how you're getting your eyes on your content. I can see to a certain degree the volleyball, you know, some of these other sports. I get it. But come on. Like, start being a little bit more understanding of what your viewership wants to see.
How your bread is buttered.
Thank you. And then the other thing is, like, I think they're going, like, I really like the Yogi Roth and the Mike Yam and the crew that they brought in. But, like, start adding a little more specific shows around, like, on National Signing Day. Why does the Pac-12 network not have a National Signing Day show? Where, like, every other single network does, right?
I think that's inexcusable. I mean, to that point, I think they absolutely need to get their head out of their ass and realize what is writing the checks, writing and cashing their checks. They need to start catering to it a lot better. They also negotiated as part of their big media rights deal that was kind of, you know, groundbreaking at the time, a lot of content on these Olympic sports to their cable providers.
Right.
That was something that they considered that they were giving, and the cable providers thought they were getting. That was a bargaining chip they used. I think that is a directive that's coming from the university presidents, not necessarily from Larry Scott.
Well, they've guaranteed.
I think that's where I wanted to come back to that issue. How much is Larry Scott at fault, or how much is he kind of carrying out the mission that is given to him by his bosses, the board, the Pac-12 presidents? You know, and I think that is something that kind of remains to be seen. Definitely 10 years ago, he was doing what he was being asked to do. Now you've had a lot of turnover at that president position and a decade of complaining, right? About truck racing coming on and in front of the game.
How bad the network is, yeah.
Nothing on National Signing Day. They've made mistakes, huge mistakes, that they need to correct. I also don't want to just lay all of the blame on Larry Scott's bald little head. I think that there's more to it, and I think that I wish that some of these articles, like John Canzano, who wants somebody to blame, would look at the bigger picture.
My only comment on that is when you are being compensated as the highest.
That's another issue. Yeah,
the burn rate of the Pac-12
is
absurd. Like
it is ridiculous.
Another reason
man.
I wouldn't
the
invest.
Real estate in downtown San Francisco.
Oh God!
No, I mean that's why what Canzano did, I think, was huge. It shined a light on these issues, and now he's going to have to answer for them. The presidents aren't going to like to deal with these questions. They're going to want answers to these questions. So I think that he has done the Pac-12 a great service in shining a light on some of these issues. The question is, how do you fix it? Because you look at the Big Ten and the SEC, you have a fan base, very deep, very loyal, very large, that is going to watch their games no matter what. In the Pac-12, do you guys think that we are in the minority or the majority of fans?
You're right.
Because I feel like we, the hardcore, are in the minority.
You're right. You're right.
Whereas in some other parts of the country, I think we'd be in the majority. And I think that's an issue that doesn't get brought up in all of this, which is the Pac-12, the West Coast, the culture, all of it is just different. And if you want money that's along the lines of the SEC and the Big Ten, there's more to that than just go out and get us a better deal. Yeah. You got to have the eyeballs on these television sets that are watching to make that happen.
That's right. I mean, at the end of the day, look, I'm not going to sit here and argue for number one or number two. I feel like, you know, the SEC and the Big Ten really have that locked up. But I will argue for, like, we should aspire to be that third for sure.
Yeah.
And not where if you pull 100 college football fans and say who's the fifth in the Power 5 conference right now, they're all saying it's 90 of them are going to say Pac-12, right? We shouldn't be at that spot. I had a test for that. Do you want to get into it? You have a couple more?
Let's hear it, BT.
Okay. I came up with this test. I was talking to some other friends who are fans of other conferences and say, like, so how do you judge at end of season who's the top, you know, who's number one, who's number five from a conference perspective? And I think it's a weighted thing where you can't just say, like, if you had a head-to-head tournament at the end of the year, our number one against your number one, your number two, wrestling, right? You know, you're 101 pounder against all the way up to our unlimited. In the end, they win. That's one way to settle this. But I also think that it's much more important how the top dog does. You have to weight it that if you have a national champion every year, that's much more valuable than your 10, 11, and 12 beating your like the others 10, 11, and 12. So I came up with this average. You guys tell me what you think. As an average, so do you think we'll say for the start that it's six times more important for your top team to win?
Okay.
6 points, right?
Okay.
Your bottom tier, so your bottom half is worth 1 point.
Okay.
And head-to-head. Middle three is worth 2 points. Your second and third place are worth 3 points.
Okay.
In a head-to-head battle. So if you're lining up conference to conference, my 12 beats your 12, that's 1 point.
Yeah.
Right? But my one beats your one, that's 6 points.
It's an interesting I would almost weight it higher than six. I would say my top is 10.
You'd almost say 10?
I would say 10 points, but I like where you're going with this. Like, let's keep it with
now,
six.
Here,
because it's your brand.
I want to hear
they represent your conference brand.
He's already running
Let's stack it up. I want you to see. So, Oregon State, Kansas. Who wins?
Oh, gosh.
Kansas.
Kansas, yeah.
Yep. Okay. Here we go. UCLA, Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State.
Colorado, Texas Tech.
Texas Tech, yeah.
Okay. USC, Kansas State.
I'll take SC.
Yeah.
Okay. California and Baylor.
Baylor?
Yeah. I'm going to take Cal.
Yeah.
You take Cal? I take Cal as well. I take Cal on that. Okay. TCU, Arizona State.
Didn't they play?
I think they
final game of the year.
Bowl game.
Didn't they play in the bowl game?
Yeah, in the bowl game.
Maybe. Oh, no, no, no. They played, ASU played in the Vegas Bowl.
Yeah.
Give me TCU.
TCU, okay. Okay. West Virginia, Stanford.
Stanford.
I'll take Stanford.
Okay. Utah, Iowa State.
Utah.
Take Utah.
Okay. Washington State, Texas.
Texas.
UW, Oklahoma.
Oh, God.
Oklahoma.
Last year.
If it's last year, it's
okay.
Oklahoma.
Okay, so yeah. So there in this formula, uh-huh. You need 12 and a half or higher. We're 8. So in this, even you'd say in this, like, we're losing to the Big 12, okay? Mm-hmm. Now here, this is where it gets interesting, ACC, okay? Now, they have 14 teams who had to take out two in the middle, but okay. They're still like and like, okay?
Right.
North Carolina, Oregon State.
North Carolina.
Yeah.
Louisville, UCLA.
UCLA.
I'll take Louisville.
Okay, I'm going to break that tie with UCLA. Louisville was garbage last year.
Yeah.
Wake Forest, Colorado.
God, Colorado was terrible.
I'll take Colorado on that one.
Let's do Colorado.
Florida State, Arizona.
Florida State.
God, they were a dumpster fire last year, though.
Yeah, but so was Arizona.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I might go Florida State as well. Virginia Tech, USC.
SC?
Ooh,
SC.
Good one.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'm going to say SC.
I'll take SC.
Okay. Miami, Cal.
Miami.
Yeah.
Miami was garbage last year, but still. Okay.
Whatever.
BC, ASU.
ASU. I'm going to say ASU.
ASU.
Okay. Pitt, Oregon.
Oregon.
Take Oregon.
I'd take Oregon over Pitt, yeah. Georgia Tech, Stanford.
Stanford.
Wow, we're heavy on the funds.
Utah, NC State.
Utah.
Utah.
Yeah.
Syracuse, Wazoo.
Syracuse was interesting last year.
I'm going to take Zoo Crew.
Yeah, let's go Wazoo. I like that.
Okay. So, in the end, Clemson over UW.
Yeah.
So, this is an interesting one. So, there you've got 15 points for the Pac-12. And maybe, but if you'd gone with this 10-point spread, if you'd gone with 10 points weighted for the number one.
It would have been.
So, this is what I was talking to. So, this ACC. Is talking to Aggie Matt about this. The whole point was ACC versus Pac-12.
Hmm.
Right? And really what it comes down to is how important is it that you have that number one, that your
top
number
brand.
One is in the Final Four and ideally playing for a championship, winning a championship. And what has happened with ACC, it's masking garbage.
Right.
Yeah.
Because of you when you have down years of Miami
well, this
and
was
Florida
not a
State,
great year for the Pac-12. So we're comparing a bad year of the Pac-12 with some of these conferences.
Right.
And we're still probably saying, give them the edge over the ACC depth-wise.
I'm just bringing this up to say, you know, from top to bottom, which is how you might look at these, and I think, look, in the SEC top to bottom, the points aren't coming to come out very, very well, and either would we in the Big Ten last year. But that maybe it really depends on the end. It's not just how you 12 stacks up versus 12, etc. But the weighting that gives, the Clemson rising the tide of that entire conference,
absolutely.
Even though it's really garbage after.
Totally.
Here's the
agree.
Other thing. Clemson has proven it on the field. They haven't just beaten up on their little guy conference. They've also beaten Alabama twice in
That's
3 years.
That's right. Absolutely.
So, I mean, that is what gives them the heft,
yep.
Right? And that's what gives the conference the heft. Anybody who plays Clemson tough is now... They're a good team. They played Clemson tough.
Right.
We don't have that in the Pac-12.
In the end, having that team who's in the Final Four, in the playoffs, and making waves, and the same thing, like in hoops, whatever, making a Final Four, that...
This goes back to the argument where you need the Los Angeles schools to be good.
Yeah, the LA schools have to be good.
The LA schools need to be good. That's why USC needs to be good.
We voted for USC and UCLA over those I mean, I didn't pick UCLA, but you guys did.
They beat USC in the this is the bowl. This is like how they finished the year, right? Uh-huh. So they're like, say they had a bowl game where it was conference versus conference. Interesting. Well, look, in the end,
interesting. Good exercise.
Our conference has some room to grow.
Work to do. Roll up your sleeves, boys.
But at the end of the day, you know what's funny? We get so bent out of shape, and I keep looking back at, you know what? We're gonna potentially win football and basketball this year. And even if the conference is taking a little bit of a run down the toilet round,
I will take that every day and twice on Sunday.
I'm real happy with where my Huskies are doing. And that, guys, we will end the podcast, but we're going to be back. Let's do a spring show.
Spring show.
We'll do a spring show and we'll be back, guys. Let's get them. Hey, go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.